It's that time of week again, time for a new episode of the Functional Nerds. Welcome back. This is episode 7, and we've been having a lot of fun with these, and we have a lot to talk about this week. But before we do that, let's get to some introductions. My name is Patrick Hester. I am an aspiring author. I'm a blogger and now a podcaster, aficionado of the blues, and my partner in crime on this little endeavor is John Anelio.
Hello. I write songs about science fiction and fantasy. I have a blog where I post said songs, amongst other things. And Patrick and I have been doing this for a while now, and we're having a good time. And we have a special guest with us tonight, another third nerd, and that is Clifton Hill. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Clifton. I'm a freelance digital artist and also aspiring author of fantasy sci-fi. Logging the hours in insurance right now. thanks for having me on, guys.
Oh, no problem.
Yeah.
Before we get started, I just had one thing that I wanted to throw out there to both of you guys. I feel that many women who do not dress modestly can lead young men astray, corrupt their chastity, and spread adultery in the society, which consequently increases earthquakes.
Interesting.
I never thought about that. All right, thanks.
That was what kicked off Boobquake.
Yeah, I saw some of that on Twitter the last couple days.
Like, yes.
I still don't really know what that's about, but I guess that's what it's about.
I'll admit cluelessness on that as well.
That was something that a Iranian cleric said in a Friday prayer group, I guess on Iranian television or something like that. And it kind of spread across the world. And a blogger named Jen McCreet, I'm going to say is her name, picked up on it and was just absolutely confused by it. And so she suggested Boobquake. And she suggested that on Monday, April 26th, women everywhere show a little bit of cleavage and kind of look sexy and see if it creates any earthquakes.
Okay. I don't think we had any earthquakes, though, right?
We didn't, but we did have...
We're in the Bay Area. They probably had some earthquakes over here, I'm sure.
Well, what ended up happening was a lot of ladies took this to heart, and so Boobquake was trending on Twitter.
Yeah, I saw it. Well, there you go. That makes sense, though.
So that's what that was all about, and I just was curious if you guys had seen anything about it. If you hadn't, that's fine. I would just like to say to all the ladies who were part of Boobquake, thank you. What?
And now he's at his spiel.
Yeah, you could tell that Patrick is the unmarried one in the three people here.
That's right.
Like Cliff and I were like, I'm not going to say anything. So,
our wives, listen to this. You're going to get us in trouble.
Yeah, my wife.
Yeah, right. I don't think my wife will listen to this either.
Hey,
yeah, my wife asked, what are you guys nerdcasting about tonight?
Hey, you know what, Clifton? If you don't bring at least one listener to this thing, we're not going to have you back.
Well, I can get my daughter to listen. She's two.
There you go. That's all we ask.
Yeah.
All right.
All righty. So, you know, we've done this last week. We had Kate Sherrod on. This is a new thing for us. And, you know, this is the third nerd. And so we just try to torture you as much as possible because that is entertaining for both of our listeners.
And for yourselves too, I presume, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. So, just kind of looking at some stuff here. We talked about it weeks ago. We warned people about it. Hulu, and this is one of John's favorite websites, by the way. Mm-hmm. Hulu is going paid. They are going to go to a $9.95 subscription called Hulu Plus, and when they do that, you'll have about a month now to enjoy free episodes. But once they go over to the $9.95 Hulu Plus, you'll only get the last 5 episodes for free, and then everything else before that's going to require the subscription, which sucks.
Now, weren't most of their shows already doing just the last 5 episodes?
Yeah, that's – I mean, well – Patrick, why don't you finish the rest of the kind of spiel there with that? Because I do have some thoughts about that in terms of the last five episodes and stuff. So okay. I don't know if you had anything else you wanted to say about that.
Well, yeah. I mean, the model that they have right now, which is free, is actually profitable. I mean, they're mm-hmm. making money off of the advertising that they're doing. They started turning a profit 6 months ago, but News Corp, which is Murdoch, mm-hmm. from Fox, and NBC and Disney, who all own it, are pushing because they want to make more money. They want additional pay models. So, you know, they just want to make more money on top of the advertising. Now, mm-hmm. the Hulu news has been gathering a lot of negative attention from different people. But what's kind of interesting is that there was also a very quiet news release from YouTube where they said that they now have a movie rental service. And it seems like hardly anybody is talking about that on the web. You kind of have to search to find it. And their new service allows you to rent from a wide variety of flicks, and the prices range from 99 cents to $3.99. It's all handed through Google. And once you rent the movie, you have 48 hours to watch it. But it's interesting that that is really, really quiet, and people really aren't bitching about it. But the Hulu deal has everybody up in arms.
Well, I in terms of the Hulu thing, you know, Clifton's right. I mean, right now, most of the shows are just the last five episodes.
All the new stuff.
Yeah, out of the newer things. So, I mean, if it's a new show, you can only watch the last five episodes anyway. So, you know, as I said, I was watching the SG-1, and they had everything up there. So I guess that stuff you're going to have to pay for to get that whole exactly. back catalog. I don't have a big problem with this. I doubt I'll go to the subscription with it. But I don't have a big problem with it if the last five episodes are still going to be free. This is this is what I guess they would call a freemium model. And I don't know. Did either of you guys read Chris Anderson's free book? Chris Anderson's the head of Wired, the head editor at Wired magazine. And
no.
Have
no.
you guys? Very nope. much worth reading, especially for you two guys. You know, you guys are both authors, and you know, I'm assuming at one point you would like to make some money from your writing. And
that would be nice.
Yeah, well, you know, and I'm from the point of view of doing it via music, and Chris Anderson's written a couple good books. He wrote The Long Tail as well, which you might be at least familiar with that concept.
I'm very familiar with that concept. Yes.
Yeah, so that's Chris Anderson's trip, and Free was his most recent book, talking about how essentially in today's business world, you know, if you're a creator, how, you know, you have to have some sort of free component to what you don't have to, but it certainly seems to help these days if you have some sort of free component to what you're doing, whether you give tons of your stuff away or whether you give some things away and charge for others. And one of the models he talks about is the freemium model, which generally has to do with software or some sort of online service. And it's where you charge, you give a lot of it away for free, and then you charge for the, you know, for an extended service. Like sure. I use Box.net, and we use right. it actually for this podcast.
Yes.
And Box has a pretty generous free part where you could sort of store your files online. And I used that for quite a while. But I went to the paid part of it because one of my songs early on was getting a ton of downloads, and I blew out my bandwidth. The Summer Glass song got like 1,000 downloads in a couple of days, and I went over my bandwidth and I couldn't use it anymore. So I went to the paid service, was happy to do it because it ended up being, I think it's like $7 a month or something like that. And,
and then George R. R. Martin is
yeah.
not your bitch.
Yeah, and that really like blew out. Well, that would have blown up my bandwidth if I didn't have that, because that was like 25,000 downloads or something in a couple of days. So that's a good example of a freemium model where I was all too happy to pay the $7 a month because, you know, I needed it. But you know what? I wouldn't have been using them if I didn't use their free service for a couple of weeks.
Sure.
So I think.
Yeah, certainly a good model. I think Patrick's kind of doing it with his Evermist as well as his other stuff too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that's the writer's platform. When you look at Hulu, they're doing it a little bit differently though, because what they're doing is they're giving everything away for free. Mm-hmm. And now that you've had the first little taste, they're going to start charging you for it.
Yeah, which is no problem, but I think $9 or was it $10 is probably a little too much, but I would say I would be more intrigued at like the $2 to $5 range, but
really what it comes down to is they're still trying to figure it out. They don't know what's going to work.
Exactly.
Now, I know that Clifton, you don't have, and this isn't necessarily a bad thing or a smack against you or anything. I'm just saying it you don't have as much out there on the web.
No, I'm more starting out, certainly.
Right. So you know, you're trying to build your platform.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely what John's talking about with the, especially with the long tail theory is, you know, you give a little something, you give a little something, you give a little something to keep them coming back over and over and getting interested in what you, and then when you have something that you actually want to sell, you put that up and you're like, you know, here's something, please purchase it because you liked all the other stuff. And when you talk about,
you've established an interest in your whatever you're offering.
Exactly. So when you talk about Evermist, that's kind of what I'm doing. That is something that was completed a while ago, and I probably could make it more palatable for like print and then like take it to an agent and all that kind of crap, but I don't really want to do that. It was originally intended and written to be a serialized piece on the web. And so that's what I'm doing with it and kind of giving it away for free, hoping that people will read it, get interested in it, like it, and want more. And then when I have something to actually sell them, they'll buy it.
Yeah, well, that's essentially what I've done. I mean, I was just giving all my stuff away for free until I put the CD out. I mean, sure. The CD didn't come out until, I was doing it for like a year and a half, and I'm still putting out stuff for free. You know, if anything, I'm giving everything out for free to begin with. And even, I mean, honestly, if you go through my site, you can find all of the songs on my album. I don't make it easy to do. Everything else is easy to find, but the stuff on my album, you have to dig around a little bit. Because I just kind of figure I'm trying, and I think most people are like this at this point, especially if you're doing something creative like we are. You want to give people an opportunity to sort of form a connection with what you're doing. And you don't want to do anything to get in the way of that. I mean,
absolutely.
Because there are a million people that are writing, and there are a million people making albums, and, you know, I mean, at this point in my life, I don't really think it's very likely that I'm going to make a full-time living just from writing songs. But do I like doing it? Yeah, I have to do it. I'm going to do it no matter what. Would it be nice to, and I, you know, the money component of it isn't even really that big. It's nice to have a community that's sort of interested in what I'm doing. Even if I never make a cent doing this, it's better than nothing. I wrote songs for years and years and played coffee shops and everything, and eventually grew fairly disillusioned with it, not because I wasn't like making any money, but because I wasn't really connecting with people all that much. And I really didn't write very much for the couple of years preceding doing sci-fi songs. So doing sci-fi songs got me back into writing. And if all I ever do is put out my songs for free and have people say like, hey, this is cool, that's good enough for me. Would it be nice to make a couple bucks? Of course. But, you know, absolutely, that's not the primary reason. The primary reason is it's nice that I get to talk to you two guys and we get to talk about this stuff. And it's just, you know, as a, it gets like, this is where like the artsy fartsy side of me really comes out. I think it's important. I think it's important for a society to, you know, to sort of, you know, have an artistic community, you know. And I know for me, I think as you get older, it's harder to be a part of that artistic community. When you're in your early 20s or whatever, yeah, you can go to writers groups and you can go to, you know, open mic nights and things like that. and you could be part of that artist community. But as you get older, I think it's harder and you have more responsibilities. It's harder to be a part of that. And I think what the web has enabled is for people to continue to be a part of that artistic community.
Sure.
And you have to. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I was just going to say, yeah, I mean, that you absolutely have to approach it that way, that it's for the enjoyment, and the money, if that ever came, would just be frosting. Because, I mean, it seems like I've certainly run across a number of people that are writing, and they seem like they, I don't know, I guess get angry or whatnot that they can't make money off of it or something like that, and that's just their main pursuit. And, mm-hmm. You know, I'll even admit that I kind of did it with art a little bit. Like, I do some freelance art, but it's not a very big thing at all for me. It's mostly just something I do on some very rare free time. Yeah. I used to take it from an approach I wanted to make money off of it full time. It's very, very competitive to do it full time, though. So you kind of have to make that approach that I'm just going to do it for fun. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to continue doing it because you'll just get too frustrated and you won't be able to get good at it.
Well, yeah, and it's the reason why I went into education is because you can make a living as a musician, and I could have done it, but I would have had to play in wedding bands, and I would have had to just take a lot. No, I mean, you can make a living.
You're absolutely right.
Wedding singer.
Yep.
But I was in a cover band when I was in college, and I was in a cover band even a couple years ago that was more enjoyable. But I was in a cover band in college that we made a little bit of money. And it was fun at first, and fairly quickly I grew to hate it. And I realized, you know what? I don't want to do this. I don't want to make music something that I don't enjoy. And I made that decision. It's like, you know what? I'm gonna get a teaching job, and I'll teach. And in the time that I'm not teaching, I'll do the kind of arty stuff that I want to do, and I'll enjoy it. And that's kind of the way that I've done it, and it's worked out fairly well for me. But, you know, I think if you're going into it trying to make a living, you know, you're going to end up maybe taking gigs that you don't like, and you're going to end up just disappointed. I think it's not very realistic to think that everyone's just going to think what you have to say is so interesting. I think we're all, well, I'll just speak for myself, but it's like, I know I'm narcissistic that I want people to think what I have to say or do is brilliant, but you know what? Most people could give a rat's butt about it, you know? So, you know, you have to do it because you like it, and then, you know, you kind of find about it that way. But just to, like, kind of bring it back into topic
Hold on. I mean, you talk about doing, like, gigs that you don't want to do, and wedding singer, and that, you know, I one of the things that I don't necessarily talk about it a lot, but I do play guitar and I sing a little bit, and I used to write songs, and I am completely self-taught. I did it because my family would get together and we're so musical. You know, my brother plays guitar and he can play piano and drums and all these different things. My cousins, they all play or sing or do different things. And, you know, their dad plays and sings. So when we would get together, it'd be very musical. But they were playing crap I never wanted to hear. I am not, you know, I grew up in a twangy country music house. And, you know, I don't want to go to Christmas and have to listen to Merle Haggard songs. And so, you know, I had a job that did a use it or get paid for it vacation policy. So when I didn't use up my vacation one year, I said, cut me a check. I took the check down. I bought my Takamine, and I taught myself how to play guitar so I could start playing the music that I wanted to hear. And I got pretty good at it, you know, and I play the blues and I play a little bit of rock and this kind of, you know, that kind of stuff. And I would always have people tell me, you need to be playing in coffee shops. You know, oh, coffee shops. I mean, they were talking about it all the time. You know, you need to play in coffee shops. And I would think to Christmases when I would start playing a song and someone would start talking over me. And how annoyed I would get. And I just thought to myself, if I did some sort of gig like that, you know, and kind of went down the music route, I would get in a lot of trouble for smacking somebody.
Yeah, and you might break your Takamine too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little demeaning as I haven't done a lot of actual gigs in a while, not since I've been doing sci-fi songs. Like I said, I was doing some cover band gigs. And when you're going into like a bar band, cover band sort of thing, you know the gig. So it's like it's not like people are hanging on your every word. But when I was doing coffee shops, there is in some ways a conception that, oh, you know, you could do your sensitive singer-songwriter stuff there. And it's the same thing there. People talk and stuff. And like sure. I was fine with that. But like that was the thing. When I started playing coffee shops, I was doing mostly original music. And then by the end of my run of doing that, I was playing mostly covers, like probably 80% covers, because I wanted to sort of entertain
right.
as well. And then it got to the point where it's like, well, I don't know. Do I want to be doing 80% covers? Like, and I didn't mind because I was doing stuff that I liked. But it was sort of like, I don't know, is this really what I want to do? And like, yeah, it's you could be thinking you're doing the most brilliant musical thing, and then there's a family sort of eating their ice cream who could really give a shit about what you're doing. So,
and there goes the tag on this podcast.
Yeah, I think Steve Jobs is going to get mad at us because I just swore. I think we'll get
that's
we'll
okay. This means I got to switch the tag. Not a big deal.
Yeah,
you can cuss. Anyway. You can cuss anytime you want, John.
Yeah, I'll try to. I'm sorry. Most of the podcasts I listen to, they're filthy on it. So I.
You've picked up some S-book. Bad manners, huh?
Yeah, I know. Well, it's the teaching all day. I have to hold it all in all day long.
You're Bob Saget after
post Full House. Yeah,
Full House was over, and he went on HBO, and he said, "Can I just say for 1 second, fuck?"
Yeah, yeah. So now the gloves are off. But anyway, to the freemium thing, you know, like I know everyone's complaining about Hulu and everything, and you know what? Here's the thing. If no one buys it, then they're not going to continue to do it. But I kind of feel like, you know what? The free part is kind of what they're already doing. And I don't begrudge any company for trying to make some money. And they'll see if people do it, then that's fine. I mean, I am probably not going to spend $10 a month on that in the way that it is. But what I might spend $10 a month on is if – number one, it would have to be able to go to the Roku player so I can actually watch it on TV.
Which it won't.
Which I don't think it will. Not right now, anyway. It would have to have a very large catalog, which I think it has a pretty decent catalog right now.
Yeah.
But it's like if everything that they had, because there's a bunch of shows on there. Like, so we're talking about the last 5 episodes that appear. There's a bunch of shows on there that I'm pretty interested in getting into, but they only have the last 5 shows, and I missed the first half of the season, so I'm not going to watch those.
I mean, even like,
yeah, exactly. So, I mean, like, I've sort of kept up with the 3 science fiction shows that I watch, like the Flash Forward and V and Stargate Universe. So, I'm up to date on all those. But there's like a bunch of comedies that I'm kind of interested in watching. And I guess with the comedy, you don't necessarily have to watch from the beginning, but I'd want to anyway. But, you know, like there's Community and there's Modern Family, like shows that get rated.
Oh, Modern Family.
Yeah.
Dude, that is a fantastic show.
Right. Well, that's what everybody says, and I'd like to watch it, but it's only the last 5 episodes. So I'm just like, eh, I'll wait till it comes out on DVD.
Hey, did you get it?
No. How's your dad?
Acting weird.
Hey, wife.
Honey, hi. Listen.
Mom.
Yeah, Luke, hang on 1 second.
Honey, it's okay. I don't feel things anymore.
But, sweetie, I want you to feel. Luke, I'll be with you in just a second. Where are you going?
Just heading out to the yard to get a shovel for my cake.
Mom.
Luke, what do you want?
I went on Dad's computer, contacted some of his geek friends, told them that he was dying, and his last wish was an iPad.
Luke, what have I told you about
one of them felt so bad, they brought over an extra.
Oh, my God. You got it, you beautiful little liar.
Here comes Dad.
You know, but if they had that whole season up there where I could start right from episode 1, I'd probably watch it, you know?
Is their subscription service supposed to include a full season or all seasons?
Yeah, I think the understanding is that if you pay that $10 a month, they'll just have
the back catalog.
They'll have everything. So
okay,
you
I can certainly see that as being worthwhile if you have a couple of shows at least on there that are.
You know what though? You know what though? You talk about the Roku player. It almost sounds to me like what they're doing is what Netflix is doing. And if you get Netflix, it can go directly to your TV right now.
Yeah, exactly. But the problem with Netflix is that there's nothing really. Well, I shouldn't say nothing, but there's very little that's new.
It depends.
Everything's a year old. Some things are new, like the Stars stuff.
Yes,
they have like a deal with Stars, and I watched. They have a show called Party Down, which is a comedy, which is very good. And they started a second season of that, and I think they're 3 episodes into it on Stars, and the first episode or two is already up on the Roku player. I haven't watched it yet, but I plan on. And so that's nice. But
well, and the entire season of Spartacus was up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So those go right up. Yeah. Those go right up. But, you know, something like, Chuck or something, that's not on streaming at all. That's just the DVDs. So you can get that through Hulu. But again, that's only the last 5 episodes. So, you know, it's all great, but I would probably be willing to do $10 a month on Hulu if it was on the Roku player and if it had like a very big catalog of stuff, you know. And I don't think it's going to be on the Roku player, and I don't know if the catalog is going to be big enough to really warrant the $10 a month for me.
Now, you catch up a lot on Hulu.
Yes.
Uh-huh. What about you, Clifton? I mean, are you a TV guy? Do you watch when it's live? Do you watch it on Hulu? Do you watch it on like?
We don't have any TV reception at all. Actually, we do all of our TV watching online. It's not too much. I've mostly just been kind of doing some writing, and my wife and I have a few programs we watch together. Maybe Guilty Pleasures, perhaps Dancing with the Stars, and
Get Biggest Off My Loser. Podcast.
She likes it. What can I say? And there's entertaining moments to it. But no, I have watched V. I think I'm up to date. I might be lacking on the last episode. And I just started watching Fringe. I was curious to see what that was like. And yeah, that actually had a really good, most of the first episode I've seen it so far. And very interested, yeah.
See, Anelio is still behind on Fringe.
Yeah, that's one I haven't gotten to yet. But
yeah,
I
love it. It definitely, harkens back to X-Files a little bit. This one seems maybe, I don't know. I'm actually kind of enjoying it more in some respects than I did X-Files. But this is, again, just like the first half of the first episode, so I don't know.
There's not really a skeptic on Fringe. I think they all believe at this point.
Who was the skeptic on X-Files?
Scully.
Oh, true, true. Well, okay. Well, they could always introduce one later, of course, depending.
Mulder believed and Scully did not.
Yeah.
Even after she was like kidnapped, I think she still had some troubles believing anything. But yeah, I just look at it and I see, I mean, if you really look at Hulu's back catalog of stuff that they've got, it's no different than Netflix. So really the only advantage they have, John, is what you're talking about, which is those 5 most recent episodes.
Yeah, it's that. Well, I mean, that's the thing. But if they go to the plus where every new show that they have, you have the whole season, that's something. Is it $10 or something? Maybe not for me. But also, I think with Netflix, the streaming is somewhat limited in terms of what they have. Like the SG-1 stuff is not there to stream on Netflix. You have to get the DVDs of that.
They will change and enhance that.
Well, that's what I'm hoping. I mean, I'm hoping Netflix. I mean, Netflix has recently made the deal. I think it was with Warner Brothers. And now I think it's with another one where they're not releasing the movies. On the release date, it's 30 days right after, so yep, that, you know, they have a 30-day window to try to sell.
They're doing the same thing to Redbox.
Yeah.
They're trying to force Redbox to do that so that they have 30 days to sell the DVD before they rent it.
Yeah. Now, Netflix made those deals mostly because I think they were like, all right, well, we'll do that, but you have to give us more streaming rights. Because right, Netflix, I think wisely so, sees that, you know, physical discs are not going to be around forever. And I mean, it's a very forward-thinking company when you think about it, because Netflix has been around for a while, and they've used the name Netflix from the beginning.
Yep.
And that was very forward-thinking, because who would have thought that it would have gone to streaming 10 years ago or whenever Netflix started? Why not be called Disc and Mail? You know, because that's what they were. I mean, that's not so catchy of a name, but, you know, they knew it. And I think they were smart, because I started using Netflix not that long ago, maybe 2 years ago or so, and I liked it. But then once the streaming started and I got the Roku player, like, I love doing it that way.
The stream is what brought us back to it, because we were using Blockbuster and they're like, you know, combined. Well, they're combined in store, you know, like a DVD rental. So like we were using the mail disc, and then you go
right,
and disc in the store too, which was nice for like a sporadic disc here and there. But now that Netflix does their instant plays, I mean, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was definitely like a big, and it just, you know, they were smart about rolling out the streaming, because it was just a bonus at first. You know, it was just like, oh, you could do this too. And so you didn't have a lot of expectations for the streaming in the beginning. Now they're just really trying to build that up. And that's, and the thing is, like, so I have like the $8.99 a month plan for Netflix.
Yeah, I do too.
You know, yeah. And it's basically, I used more at one point as well. But you know, I was getting three discs at a time at one point. But once we got the Roku player, I just went down to the one, because then we stream a lot of stuff. So, and I still like being able to get the physical discs because of the limited catalog. But once they get more up there, like I won't need a physical disc. I don't care about the physical. I'd rather not have the physical disc. It's just a lot of the stuff is not there. But I know that's why they made those deals, is they want to get more up there. I mean, they want to have everything up there. They want you to be able to get everything. So I haven't really seen too big of an increase since they've made those deals. Like, I was hoping to really see more up on the streaming than there is. There's still a lot of stuff I look up there and I don't see it yet, but hopefully that's just going to grow more and more. And, you know, 6 months, a year from now, you're going to see a ton of stuff up there that's not up there yet. So
I hate Blockbuster.
Well, we did never like them with their late fees. Those were no fun.
Yeah.
But, yeah. we used them. It was a necessary evil in our area. The only other option for a while was Hollywood Video, and they had kind of a lackluster selection. Now they're closed.
When I moved to Tennessee, I was by myself a lot. I had a job that required me to not get particularly friendly with any of the customers, which just kind of sucked. So, you know, I went from California surrounded by tons of people who loved me to Tennessee where I knew no one. And so I spent a lot of time at Blockbuster, and they had something I'd never seen before, which was a drive-through drop-off. So you could just, you know, if you rented your stuff, you could drive through, drop your stuff off.
So you
can
avoid absolutely all human interaction.
Exactly, which is what I'm striving for. And the problem was, you know, I started using that, and then I'd go in and they're like, well, we got to charge you late fees. You know, you got to pay your late fees. I'm like, what late fees? And they said, well, you brought your movies back late. And I thought, oh, crap. I didn't realize I'd done that. And I'm like, okay, you know, and I'd shell out $20, whatever, you know, for these late fees. And I'd rent some more stuff. And then I'd, you know, if I came back in to get more movies, it was fine. But whenever I used that little Dropbox outside, I always got charged late fees. So I figured it out. I'm like, wait a minute. There's something wrong with your box out here. And they said, what do you mean? And I said, well, every time I drop my movies off in there, you charge me late fees. So I don't think you guys are checking that box. And the guy said,
found it was actually the garbage can, right?
No, it was actually a box. And the guy said, well, hold on a second. Let me look in the computer. And he's, you know, tapping away on the computer. And he says, okay, sir, it's everything's set up. You're not allowed to use that box anymore.
What?
And I said, what do you mean I'm not allowed to use that box anymore? He's like, well, we're not checking your movies in late and you're bitching about it, so you're not allowed to use that box anymore.
Well, they're pretty much out of business at this point, right? I mean, I still see a block. There's like one Blockbuster in my area, but there used to be one on every corner, and now there's like one within like 50 miles of here, and that's pretty much it. So,
I handed him the movies that I'd picked out, and I handed him my Blockbuster card, and I left. And I haven't been back since.
Yeah, yeah.
Good call. Whenever they tried to tell me, them or Hollywood Video actually was guilty of it too at some point, but tried to tell me that I was late. And sometimes I may have legitimately been late, but honestly, I couldn't recall at the time. So when they accused me of it, I just said, no, I turned it in on time. And, you know, they would kind of think about it for a little bit, and then they would say, okay, well, we'll fix that for you.
Well, you know what? You shouldn't be renting movies anyway. You should be reading books.
Of course.
Speaking of books, because I'm tired of talking about Hulu.
Yeah, me too.
Tor has turned 30 years old.
Surprised it's not older.
Yeah, but they're 30. They turned 30 just a few days ago. And I, you know, if you look at the pictures I've taken of my bookshelves, I think you can pretty much tell that I am a fan of Tor books. I'd go so far as to say that I look for Tor or Forge on the binding of the book before I buy it a lot of times, which has bitten me in the ass. I will admit that. And I'm thinking of David Drake, I think, was a terrible book that I read. Anyway, but for the most part, you know, I love Tor. I don't know what you guys feel about it. I think they have some of the strongest sci-fi and fantasy out there.
What's the, do you know offhand what the first Tor book is?
I have no idea.
Okay, sorry, I didn't mean to put you on the spot like that. I just thought, you know, with all the 30-year anniversary stuff, I wasn't sure if that was, like, something that would have come up on the internet, you know.
Gee.
That would be interesting to find out.
Yeah. Thanks for making me look bad there, Anelio. I really appreciate that. I thought you were leading us down to the, oh, I happen to know what the number
well,
one
Well, I'm sure
was.
It would only take a five-second Google search to find that out, but let's see. Tor, I have a computer here. First
consult Dr. Google.
Yeah.
So what about you, Clifton? Are you a Tor fan?
You know, I can't say off the top of my head if I have a lot of Tor books. I certainly have all the Robert Jordan ones. Can't think who else I might have off the top of my head, but hey, Jordan was good for me.
Oh yeah. Jordan Goodkind. I don't know if you saw that Terry Goodkind has signed up to do three more of the Sword of Truth novels.
You know, actually, I haven't even read him yet. Is he? I'm gathering he's good, huh?
Mm.
I've never read Goodkind, but Goodkind gets slammed. Like, there's a lot of negative stuff about Goodkind all of the time. Like, I haven't read him, so I can't say, but.
I would say read the first four, possibly five books. I would go all the way up to Faith of the Fallen, and then I would read that with a grain of salt, and then I would not read anything else after that.
And now what series was that?
The Sword of Truth.
Sword of Truth. Oh, okay.
That's the Legend of the Seeker, that show that just got canceled.
Oh, yeah, I saw that today. Yeah, got canceled.
Yeah, the Legend of the Seeker television show was loosely based on the Sword of Truth series from Terry Goodkind. And by loosely, they mean we used the same character names.
Hmm. Yeah. Now, I have a favorite Tor series. I don't know if we want to get into that right now, into what our favorite is yours.
Why not?
I'll get into mine. My favorite is the one that got me into or back into fantasy, or like I wasn't much of a reader as a kid. Most of the people that I sort of talked to online, you know, were big readers as kids and were into fantasy and sci-fi as kids. I was into Star Wars as a kid, like watching the movies and playing games and stuff like that. But I did not really read for pleasure until I was an adult. You know, neither of my parents were big readers. I was a very good student, but I was never like a big reader for pleasure. It wasn't until really after college that I really read. I read some Star Wars books in college, but I never really read anything like that. So when I started reading for pleasure, when I was in my early 20s, I read a lot of books that I thought I should have read. Not even fantasy sci-fi. I'm talking about, like, you know, I think I read some Hemingway and I read like The Great Gatsby and, like, you know, stuff that a young artistic individual, young man that was trying to impress young artistic women thought he should have read. So, you know, I read all that stuff. And then
you had ulterior motives, apparently.
Of course I did. Yeah, I was trying to, like, look smart, you know. So I read a lot of that stuff, and I eventually started reading all of the Vonnegut stuff. So Vonnegut, I guess, was sort of my sort of gateway into science fiction, because he, you know, he's considered science fiction a lot of times. I just thought he was literary, but I love all the Vonnegut stuff. I read all that years ago. But the first, like, real fantasy stuff that I read was a tour book, and it was the author's name is Elizabeth Hayden.
Okay, yeah.
And it's it's the Rhapsody trilogy. I think it has a different name, but Rhapsody is the name of the first book. And it's a trilogy, and then there was two books after that as well. But it was like Rhapsody, Prophecy, and Destiny are the name of the trilogy. And I got into it because there's a strong music element to it. And I think I spoke of this before, and then Patrick, I know you spoke of the Ellie Modisette.
Yes. Was Soprano Sorceress.
Yeah, which I think has a similar idea behind it. But, you know, I read it because I want to read something because I like it. I'm trying not to impress people. I think I'd already met my wife already, so I wasn't trying to.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah, so I'm like, all right, I read all that hard stuff. Now let me read something that I want to, you know, that I think will actually be fun, you know. So I totally did one of those Amazon searches, like, all right, what are the fantasy and sci-fi stuff that people are buying? And that was, I guess, pretty new at the time, the first book. And I read about it, and it had to do with music. And I'm like, all right, well, let's give that one a whirl. And I loved it. And there was, like, a lot of really fantastic world building. And the first, it's, even if you don't get into the rest of the trilogy, I highly recommend read the whole trilogy is really good and you know, stands up. But the first book to me, and maybe it's because it was really the first big fantasy thing that I read, so it had a strong impact on me, but it's not even, like, really, I guess you could call it a twist, but it's one of those books where you read it and then in the middle you're like, wait a minute. And then all of a sudden something mind-blowing happens in the middle. And then you're getting to the end. And when you get to the end, it's like twice as mind-blowing. And then you got to go back and read the beginning again to kind of get the ending. And then when you read that first 50 pages again, you're like, holy crap, I can't believe she did this. Holy crap. It was a very holy crap book for me. So, you know, so I can't recommend Rhapsody by Elizabeth Hayden enough. I thought it's fantastic. It's still, like, probably my favorite fantasy. So, but she hasn't done anything in a while. I haven't really heard much from her. She did some young adult stuff recently based in that universe, but she hasn't really done anything else yet. But that first book is awesome.
Sounds like you lucked out with that choice. I tend to, and Patrick and I, we were talking about this. Well, Patrick, you had that blog posting about how you choose your new novels to read. And yeah,
I did. It was over at atfmb.com.
That's right. And, you know, I find the same thing. It's very troubling for me to actually start a new series because I guess I just can't let go of, like, the last favorite one that I would read. You know, I just really want to see those same characters again do different things, but, you know, I want to see them again.
Sure.
Yeah. And I kind of have the opposite thing going these days where I start a ton of series and read book one. And then I start a different series. Like, I have so many series that I've read book one of recently that I have not read the rest of them. It's more of, like, I want to sort of taste a lot of different things. The last, like, series that I've read everything that's out there is the George R. R. Martin stuff. And I mean, I want to go back and finish this other stuff too, but it's like, no, I want to see what that one's about now. I mean, I guess if something really strikes me, maybe I'll go and end up reading the rest of it. But, you know, I haven't done that recently with anything. You know, I just read, like, book one of a lot of stuff. So,
well, that's me right now, but that's only mostly out of necessity, just because I don't have a lot of time. So I am trying to broaden my horizons because, yeah. I think I became too focused on just a few.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I'm like, I need to read some more of this. You know, get some more author styles under my belt. You know.
Sure. Yeah, I think that's totally what I did, because when I think kind of being online and being on Twitter and everything really drove that for me, because I felt like I liked being part of this community and I wanted to have more authors that I knew about, because it's funny, because actually talking to some of these people, you know, like online, like interacting with them, and I really wanted to have a greater range of things that I've read. So I know, you know, that is certainly driven, but I would like to go and actually finish some of these series that I've sort of read book one of.
Yeah.
How about you guys? What are your favorite tour stuff? Is it the Jordan stuff for both of you, or is it a...
There's actually a lot of good stuff. And like Clifton, I do agree that the Jordan stuff is fantastic. And just like you were talking about, there's a lot of people that bitch about Good Kind. Just as many bitch about Jordan.
Okay. I haven't heard as much negative. I've heard with Jordan. Jordan seems more beloved, though. And even before he passed away, it seemed like he was much more like my take on Jordan. And I haven't read the Jordan stuff. Is all right. It gets kind of meandering in the books, and he probably could have like trimmed a lot of stuff from this, but we still love him and we still love the overreaching part of it. With Good Kind, it seems like, I don't know how he is as a person, but I recall reading some stuff maybe like a year ago on a bunch of the blogs where it's just like, you know, where people just didn't seem to like him as a person, even, you know, just like really a lot of negativity about it. I forget which particular blogs I was reading, but like anytime someone would say something about Good Kind, it seemed like a whole army of people would come out and just slam how horrible it is. And I haven't read it, so I can't say. I know one of my friends got into reading that stuff recently and says it's awesome. So, I mean, look, it's if you're on books 19 of something, you know, or whatever it's at, it's got to – the initial stuff at least had to be pretty good, because it wouldn't have gotten that far if it wasn't, you know.
I used to – one of the things that I loved reading was Tom Clancy until
– I've never read him, actually.
The early stuff is fantastic. One of my favorite books is, what's that called? It's not the second one, but it was like the second movie that they made.
Clear and Present Danger?
No.
Patriot Games.
Patriot Games.
Yeah.
Patriot Games was one of my favorites. And then also, Without Remorse was a fantastic book. And I mean, he really did a lot of world building in the real world, if that makes sense.
Sure, sure.
But by the time you got into Some of All Fears, Clear and Present Danger, you know, some of the later books that just got bigger and bigger and thicker, a lot of the detail, I just sat there going, my God, move on. I don't need to know all of this crap. I really don't. And that's how a lot of people feel about Robert Jordan.
Yes.
Okay.
I was just going to say the same thing. You are invested in the characters, though, already at that point. So you kind of, at least for me, you kind of just, you know, bear through it. And you're like, well, I'll just keep reading.
And see, that's what's fun or different for me is that, you know, whereas Clancy annoyed the hell out of me, Jordan did not. And I loved Jordan. Good Kind was great. Like I said, through about Faith of the Fallen, and then the character of Richard became such a preachy little snob that I just wanted to smack somebody. You know, it was always, oh, I'm right, you're wrong, and I'm going to prove it by the end of the book, you know. And so the first few books, really good. After that, not so much. Mm-hmm. One of my least favorite authors over at Tor is David Drake. And he has the Lord of the Isles series. And boy, I just could not get into that to save my life.
Now, why was that?
It felt like it just derivative, it almost, you know, there's a lot of parallels between Good Kind and Jordan, believe it or not. Like the Radahan that they use in like the second book, I think, in order to control Richard. That kind of came out, and I don't know which came first, the Radahan or the Adam. And the Adam is in the Jordan books, and it's what the Sin Chan used to collar the Aes Sedai. very, very similar in concept. I mean, there's a lot of similarities in the first couple of books before Good kind of goes off this way and Jordan kind of goes off this way. So when I tried to read the David Drake novels, because like Clifton was saying earlier, there was a whole series and it looked like, you know, there was enough books that I thought, wow, you know, this must be doing really well. They've got a lot of books in the series. I'll be able to read this. The characters will continue on. I won't have to give them up. And you know, I read the first book and I went, I kind of read it at the laundromat at the time too, I think. And I would sit there and be reading it and going, what the hell am I reading? Why am I reading this? And me being me, I bought two of the books in the series. So then I read the second book. And by then I'm just going, you're repeating yourself. You know, this is all the same crap. I don't want to read this anymore. And I'm done.
Well, I had a moment with, and I don't know if any of you have read the Deathgate cycle. I guess it's Hickman and Weiss, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I started the eighth book, I think it was, or maybe the ninth book, I forget. Just because it was like, I think cheap at the library, they didn't have the first one, and I gave it a shot, and about 80 pages in, I had to put it down. It was, there was a lot of interesting world building to it, and great, you know, cool little aspects and elements, but I think when they started referring to the whatchamacallit, and quite literally, for anybody that hasn't read the series, it is called the whatchamacallit. And it was apparently a gigantic doomsday, death-dealing, gigantic, massive device that spanned continents, or at least a continent. And I just, you know, how can you call something like essentially like the Death Star, the whatchamacallit? I'm putting it down.
Gotcha. Now, there are a lot of Tor authors that I like, a lot of them I don't like. Some that I kind of wish that I liked or at least got involved in and have been a little bit afraid to get involved with them. Like Harry Turtledove. Have you ever heard of him?
I've heard of him. I haven't read his stuff, though. He does a lot of like alternate history stuff, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And so when you look at his, I mean, we talked once before, John, about like the gigantic tomes that you know are going to be a huge investment in your time and getting into them. That's what his books look like to me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he's like one of those guys that I'm thinking, man, I bet those are really great books and I'd probably really get into them, but I just don't know if I want to invest the time in it right now.
Well, yeah. That's where you need to get a personal recommendation from someone you kind of trust as having a similar taste. And that's a lesson to be learned for any aspiring writer and musician or anybody that's in the creative field that, you know, to get yourself out there, it's like, you know, you are probably going to need to rely on word of mouth. You're going to need to network.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And that goes back to the platform that we talked about before.
Yes.
You know, if you're right now, there are thousands of people in a pool all trying to, you know, shouting at the top of their lungs saying, hey, pick me to the publishers. And the publishers are down to, you know, being, if they were stingy in the past, they are, you know, Scrooge now. They're having to be very careful because the market isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, they're looking at more than just the written word on the page to see if they want to publish you. You know, they're looking at who are you? What can you bring to them? You know, there's tons of stuff out there on the web talking about this. You know, if people spent as much time actually writing novels as they do writing how to write novel stuff, there'd be a billion more books on the planet every year. But when you look at it, they're talking about publishers want people who can bring followers to them from Twitter and Facebook and, you know, and essentially a built-in audience. That's what they're looking for. And, you know, the better you look to them in that regard, the better your chances of getting published.
And for anybody that hasn't already seen the blog, I can't remember which. I think it was an agent or maybe it was actually an editor commented about their, you know, submissions for the year was like about 30,000 people trying to, you know, get signed on.
Yeah.
And there was only six chosen. Now, this is just one agent or editor. I can't remember which one. I want to say agent. And they only chose about six. And so that's, you know, pretty indicative, yeah, of a lot of people out there trying to get in. But she did say, for which I found interesting, that the vast majority, I think it was like 90% or something like that, were just dreck. I mean, maybe that's her jaded opinion, but, you know, it seemed like basically like they just didn't follow the submission guidelines. They didn't have really any, you know, real knowledge of story structure. And they just kind of, you know, it was bad. I mean, again, it could be her bias, but it's interesting. There's so many people out there, and yeah, the odds are really against you. And again, yes, maybe you just need to be really good and at least pay attention to what you're supposed to do when you try to submit.
Yes. Now, one of the things that I noticed on Tor's website when I was looking up their little 30th anniversary is they did have, like, on the post, they had a whole slew of pictures of the offices at Tor. And one of the pictures that they displayed rather prominently was the slush pile. And the slush pile is, you know, when you send a publisher an unsolicited manuscript, it goes into a giant pile, and it could sit there forever. It could get thrown away. It could get read. You know, you never know what's going to happen to it, but it is in something called the slush pile. And they showed a picture of it, and it was massive. I mean, there was a ton of stuff in there.
Did it fill the room?
They did a close up on it, so I don't know if it filled the room or not. Well, anyway, so happy birthday to Tor. I enjoy your books. Clifton enjoys a couple of your books. Anelio could care less.
I said the Elizabeth Hayden stuff. That's all Tor. Come on. Weren't you listening? I talked for like 5 minutes about that.
I'm sure I'll increase my Tor collection at some point.
It's definitely worth it. You know, one of the things that I'm kind of taking away from this whole show tonight, John likes to get stuff from the library, correct?
Yeah, a lot of times. I buy a lot of books too, but I do get stuff from the library as well.
Clifton has done a lot of rentals as far as movies and different things are concerned.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I
have to keep it on the cheap side.
Yep. I am structured as a collector. And this is one of the reasons why, you know, I was telling Kate last week, I'm not allowed in comic book stores anymore because my habit at one point was $200 a month. I don't like to rent things. I like to own them. And that's why my bookshelves are bowing.
Yeah. No, I don't know. Perhaps it's indicative of like having a family and having very limited space. It's like, at one point, I don't know if I was ever a huge collector, but at one point it's like, I don't want to bring anything more into this house. And like, I have no place to put anything as, if anything, I'm always trying to throw stuff away. So like the last thing I want to do is have 20 new books show up on my shelf, you know, although I do buy books quite a lot, but a lot of times I end up giving them to people when I'm done with them. You know, I'm very, I don't know. A friend of mine with like instruments, like music instruments, he once referred to eBay as his virtual closet because he would buy and sell stuff constantly. And I'm like, well, don't you want to hold on to it? He's like, yeah, if I want it, I'll go buy another one.
Wow.
You know? Like every gig,
I guess he is doing fairly well in the finances then.
No, I think or he maybe has not. Probably. No, I honestly, you know what I think it is? I think he has probably like maybe $1,000 or whatever it is that just is constantly going in and out via eBay. So like he was a guy that did a lot of coffee shop gigs with me. We'd split bills a lot of times, and every gig I think he had a different guitar. And I'm like, well, what about that other one yet? Oh, I sold it. So it's like he'd sell one guitar and buy another one. I mean, he always had like three or four guitars, but I mean, in like the 2 or 3 years that I was doing gigs with him, I must have seen him with 20 different guitars.
Wow.
Like I didn't have the time or patience for that sort of thing. But yeah, he would just be like, yeah, I want that. And he'd go buy it. And then he'd be like, yeah, I don't like it so much. Then he'd sell it back. And yeah, so he just looked at it as a virtual closet where it's like, well, if I want that again, there's plenty of that kind of guitar out there. I'll buy another one. And well, kind of makes sense when you think about it. But yeah.
Well, and I police myself. I could totally see myself if I let myself go eventually landing on A&E on intervention for hoarding.
Oh.
And so, you know, I do spring cleaning every year, and I get rid of as much crap as I possibly can. I take it to Goodwill. I take it, you know, wherever I can. What I don't get rid of is books, because I love to have books around. I love to be able to just walk downstairs, you know, and grab something and start reading it. And then I, you know, I've still got all my comic books, and I keep them around because I did at one point try to be a vendor at cons. And I would buy stuff and then sell stuff, you know, that kind of thing.
Sure. Because
you were talking about pull lists and discounts last week, John. My discount was around 45%.
So you were getting a lot.
I was getting a lot. All my friends bought their crap through me. Okay. You know, they'd come to me and they're like, I want this issue of Wolverine. Slide it in with your stuff. So, yeah, I would go and I would go to these cons and try to sell stuff. And it was painful. You know, I would set up my little booth and I'd have all my cool stuff there, and people would come by and say, oh, I want to buy this. And I'd say, okay, give me your money. And then they'd walk away and I'd be like, come back. I want it back.
Oh, you didn't like getting rid of it. I see.
No, it was very difficult.
Yeah.
So
seller's remorse, huh?
Yeah, big time. So I just kind of, I manage that. I only have two guitars. I have a hollow body and I have my acoustic. I can't imagine trading a guitar, you know, every couple of weeks. That would drive me insane because you get so used to the tone of your own guitar.
That would drive
me up a wall.
Yeah, I have a bunch of instruments at this point, but you know, I've been playing for over 20 years and this is my livelihood. I haven't purchased anything in a long time, but I eventually got to the point where I sort of had just about everything that I needed, and I wouldn't give... There's one or two that I would sell, but... You know, I have like a Strat and a Telecaster and a Les Paul, so I'm kind of covered on the electric side. And then I have, you know, a steel string acoustic and an nylon string acoustic. And then I have a lap steel and a mandolin and a bouzouki.
Bouzouki!
And I have a bass. So I have pretty much everything I need for recording and stuff. And I wouldn't sell it because I know, like, I've thought of selling the Telecaster I have, but I'm like, well, then I'm going to be recording something one day and be like, oh, this really could use a Telecaster. And like, you know, so I never really want to do that. So, but I don't really buy anything anymore either. I'm sure I will buy instruments again at some point. That's the good thing about instruments is that they don't really lose their value.
No.
If anything, they can gain value depending on... I used to buy a lot of pedals and like effects processors. That stuff loses its values like a car, you know? It's like it just... So that is something I wasted a lot of money on over the years is like effects pedals and things, and I don't even really use them anymore, but I used to spend a lot of money on that when I was single and, you know... And that stuff I don't use, and it's not really worth anything now. So if anything, if I can go back, I would have spent all that money I spent on pedals and bought a few more instruments because that stuff's actually worth something, you know.
See, and that's the power to being single, guys. I can go out and I can buy any kind of crap that I want, and the only person I have to answer to is the bank that holds the mortgage.
Well, good for you.
They can be a little aggressive, I hear, nowadays, though. Yeah.
They can be, yes. So, you know, we kind of talked a little bit about Tor. We are you guys reading anything right now? John?
I'm reading Shadow March by Tad Williams.
You did decide to start reading that, okay.
I did, yeah. I'm about 250 pages into it. You know, it's not as – it's a long book, but – You know, it's almost like when I'm reading a long book, it's kind of easier in some way because it's good though. This is like, you know, fairly traditional fantasy, so I kind of know what to expect, and it's very good so far. So, but yeah, so I'm about 250, and I will be reading that book for the next 8 podcasts. So don't ask me again what I'm reading because that's probably what I'm I'll be reading for the next month or two.
I recently read Chronicles of Hestia Hammerblood, an excerpt.
It was a little on the short side, though, I think.
That was written by Clifton Hill.
Okay.
What are you reading, Clift?
I'm also reading that. No. I got sucked into the excerpt, speaking about excerpts, by Blake Charlton, Spellwright. You guys both read that, I heard, recently.
I have not read it yet.
Oh, you haven't? Oh, okay.
Yeah, I read it, and I liked it, so...
yeah, the first, whatever it was, he had 30 pages, definitely makes me want to read the full book. And I got it from the library. We'll just see if I can get enough time to read it or not before I have to return it. And then I did also start David Farland's Rune Lords. I'd never read any of Farland.
Ooh, I read that. That was a good one.
Yeah, it is actually taken off pretty well. He throws a lot of world building elements into it right away, which kind of makes you know, you're kind of your head spin a little bit. You're like, whoa, trying to remember all these different references he's making. But it's definitely building very well. So I'm enjoying that.
Awesome. Yeah, I remember that. I read that 4 or 5 years ago, something like that.
Yeah.
I have talked about it before. I've been kind of drifting, trying to figure out what I was going to read. I'm trying to read that Kevin J. Anderson book about Hidden Empire. But I think my problem is that it's one of those books that has 1,000 different characters in it, and he keeps jumping from character to character to character to character. And so
you start to lose interest.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to keep track of everything. So over the weekend, I did a ton of writing, and I was kind of just in a zone. And I realized that I was in a mood for something because we'd kind of been talking about it here and in different places. So I ended up picking up Timothy Zahn's Heir to the Empire and started rereading that.
How's that going so far? I haven't read that in years.
Great. You know, yeah, I haven't read it in years. And so
yeah,
I read it up
like 20 years ago, yeah.
Yeah, when it first came out. And I thought, well, what the hell? Let's just pick that up and start reading it. And that has kind of hit the spot, and that's kind of getting me going. But I have been doing a lot of writing recently, so I don't know how much reading I'm actually going to be doing. Are we listening to anything that we need to tell people about? Any kind of new music or?
Nothing new for me. I've been listening to a Jeff Beck album called There and Back. It's like an instrumental guitar album. Jeff Beck's like sort of a classic. Like he sort of came up with Clapton and Jimmy Page, and he put out a bunch of instrumental albums. He was just in Rolling Stone a couple weeks ago on the cover with Clapton. So I've been listening to There and Back, which is kind of a spacey kind of jazzish sort of album, but it's a good reading music. So I've been listening to that this week.
Isn't Beck half of Cream?
No, Beck was in the Yardbirds at one point.
Yardbirds, okay.
Yeah, because the Yardbirds are sort of famous for because Clapton, Jeff Beck, and Jimmy Page were all in the Yardbirds at one time or the other.
Right.
I think Beck and Page were actually in it at the same time for a while, but Clapton was the initial guitar player, so that's their sort of relation. There's lots of interesting, you know, combinations with that, and that's a whole other podcast. But you could talk about that because, like, sort of the beginnings of Led Zeppelin are Led Zeppelin sort of formed from the ruins of the Yardbirds.
Yes,
is essentially what happened. So,
anyway. And then wasn't it the John Mayall and the Blues Breakers?
That was one of Clapton's other bands that he was in initially too, and it was all in the same like English blues scene. So they were all around the same time. But I don't know, other than Clapton being in both of those bands, I don't know if is there anything else, you know, with the Yardbirds. But
anyway. Gotcha. Yeah, I haven't been listening to anything new either. And Clifton, you're brand new. Yeah,
brand new to what?
I said you're brand new to the podcast. Have you been listening to anything?
No, I live on the cheap a little bit. Don't really listen to anything beyond just what's in my old music collection, which it's nothing really exciting to talk about.
Now you're in the Bay Area.
Yes.
Do you ever ride the Bay Area Rapid Transit System?
I ride BART every morning. Yes, I do.
It's interesting.
It's always interesting.
Yes, it is interesting because where I grew up in Fresno. They decided in the late 80s, early 90s that the Bay Area had public transportation down, and they really liked what the Bay Area was doing. And so they decided to copy it, and they wanted to start the Fresno Area Rapid Transit System. And you're laughing, but it's true. And it went through like a ton of committees, and they were ready. I mean, wow. I think they even went so far as to have ordered up some signs when somebody finally looked at it and said, fart.
That's great.
That killed it, right?
And that killed it, yes.
I suppose we can end on fart, so that's a...
Yes, we can.
Wow.
By your command.
All right.
That's an epic ending, then.
Yeah. That is an epic ending. I'd like to thank you, Clifton, for coming on the show. You're one of our third nerds now. We will be inviting you back, I'm pretty sure.
Absolutely, yeah.
It was a ton of fun. There's a ton of fun. Why don't you go ahead and, as we say, pimp your stuff. Tell us, you know, your websites and what you're working on and all that kind of good stuff.
Okay, sure. Well, I have my blog, which I don't exactly update, but every now and then when, you know, inspiration and time strikes, I do update it. It's clifton-hill.blogspot.com.
And Clifton is with one F, right?
That's one F. It's like Clinton, but with an F. And then there's the Twitter feed. That's, you know, Clifton Hill. Twitter.com/Clifton Hill.
I'm biting my lip and using my thumb to point right now.
Okay.
You said Clinton.
It's like Clinton, but with an F.
I know.
Yeah, he was making a Bill Clinton.
Oh. And that flew over my head. So, Zoom, exactly. But then and I have my art portfolio too. I am a freelance artist, like I said. It's at crusadingthought.com. That's crusadingthought.com. I do a variety of stuff, digital art. I actually wanted to get into video games for art initially, and that is a very competitive industry.
Oh, yes. I have many friends in the video game industry right now who are hating life.
Yes. And actually, quick segue, but Vancouver Film School, they're an excellent program for getting into the industry. Basically, what I would have to compete with would be people that are going to the regular classes 30, 40 hours a week, whatever, plus they're doing about 60 hours is what they say, I think, off class on their own time to work on their portfolio. So, yeah, those are the kind of people you're up against if you want to get into the video game industry, because those are the top dogs.
I actually have a friend who tried for years and years and years and years, and she actually did end up like on the peripheral of the video game industry. Her husband works for one of the major studios, but she just could not get in. And so she got to point where now she just paints. I mean, she got tired of it.
Well, she found something that she enjoys, hopefully.
Yeah.
That's what you have to do. If you can't turn it into a job, turn it into a fun hobby.
Here's something you'll love, Clifton. One of my very good friends from World of Warcraft used to write a ton of role-playing fan fiction and about his character from World of Warcraft, and he would post it on the forums. World of Warcraft has a very active forum community for role-playing. And people just absolutely loved these stories that he would put up. And based on those stories, a rival company hired him to write content for video games.
Nice.
So he didn't get to work for Blizzard, but he's working for a different company as a writer doing video game stuff, which I just thought was awesome. I mean, that's like, you know, the starlet sitting in the drugstore in the corner of Hollywood and Vine, you know, getting noticed by the producer and becoming famous. Anyway, so you got crusadingthought.com, you've got cliftonhill.blogspot.com,
clifton-hill.blogspot.com,
you've got the Twitter feed,
mm-hmm.
You've got the book that you're working on, the epic fantasy.
Yeah, definitely taking inspiration from not contemporaries, but who I'm striving for, not to mimic, but to kind of get in that same ballpark, it would be Jordan and Martin.
Your inspiration.
My inspiration, thank you.
And you do have an excerpt up on the site.
Yeah, just the first, the prologue on there. And then I also have a first couple pages of a short story as well from a short story that I've sent into Realms of Fantasy. I haven't heard anything back from them yet, so.
Well, hopefully you will. Yeah.
Probably it'll be a no. But, I mean, it's just my second try for getting it published. So the idea is just to try. I'm not expecting success yet.
Awesome. John, you want to pimp your stuff?
Sure. Twitter.com/JohnAnelio, JohnAnelio. The blog is scifisongs.blogspot.com. The most recent thing I have up there is the Blue Lego Steve Jobs Hates Flash song and video. I put up that Irish Bouzouki video of me playing the song. And the other thing I have coming up this week, it's kind of a little bit of a slow period for me, but DiNardo asked me to mind meld this week. So the mind meld this week will be up, I think, on Wednesday. So by the time you're hearing this, it'll be up. But it's about the iPad. So chime in on the iPad. And that's the first time you mentioned the iPad all show. I think it's the first time we've gone this deep into the show without talking about the iPad. So
we're branching out.
Yeah. So check out SF Signal this week. I will be on the mind meld about the iPad. I'm sure I'll put like a link to that on my blog as well.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. And why don't you go ahead?
Well, you've also got the collaboration with Dale.
Oh, Dale. Yeah, Dale sent me his stuff, and I'm starting to work on that. So hopefully I'll be able to start recording my parts for that this week.
Awesome.
So that, it'll still be a couple of weeks. And for those of you who don't know, I do have my album is out there. It's on iTunes and Amazon MP3 and CD Baby. If you just go to any of those sites and type in my name or Sci-Fi Songs, you should find the album.
Very cool. And yeah, I've got...
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say, now it's a good thing you mentioned the iPad because we almost lost that future endorsement from Apple.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, hey, the endorsements, they are rolling in. People are just like, hey, here's some money.
I'm sure they're listening.
Let's see. I've got my crap, which is atfmb.com. That's the blog. Nothing up there so far this week, but there's some good stuff from last week. So go read that. I got the Twitter feed, twitter.com/atfmb. Become one of my followers and help me in the secret war to get more followers than John Anelio.
You already have more.
I know, but I want all the followers.
Okay, I see.
I thought you were going
for a million, weren't you?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes, that would be
a slow climb. It's a slow climb.
I actually did figure out today, you know, I've got over 11,000 damn tweets on that thing.
Wow, that's a lot of tweets.
Yeah. And I figured it out. Oxford did a study and they said the average tweet is 15 words. So if you took 15 times my number of tweets, I'm at like 176,000 words. I've written a friggin' Twitter book.
Nice. Publish it.
Are you going to try to sell it? Yeah, exactly.
I'd have to figure out, first of all, how to pull all that crap down and do something with it. Anyway, every Friday I post something new on my serial fiction, which is Evermist, atfmb.com/Evermist, which is getting really, really good, and people are going, ooh. So check that out. And we still have the functionalnerds.com doing the daily updates when my work... firewall allows me to, which it didn't yesterday, but it did today, which was kind of fun. But we're doing the nerd-worthy news, so nerd news roundups every day. So go and check that out. I can't think of anything else. Can you guys?
Nope.
I think we're good.
All right. Well, thanks again to Clifton for coming on. Thanks to John.
Thank you.
I guess we'll just see you next week then.
All right. Bye-bye for now.
I should write something to end these damn things.
Thanks, Mo.
I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.